proper relationship between we the people and our chartered corporations, that they exist, at least they are historically existed, to serve specific public needs and to cause no harm. And that it's really not as big a stretch as you might believe to reclaim this history and make it ours again. Here's the 6-minute version of the 3-hour history lesson that I offer in my workshops. The American Revolution was an anti-corporate rule revolution against monarchs in Europe and the crown corporations that they installed in this new country. You may not have learned this in school, but it's true. The nation's founders redefined what a corporation was, transforming them from power holders to subordinate legal entities, chartered one at a time by their respective state legislatures with a life of usually 10 to 30 years, and legally defined with great care so that they would be required to each fulfill one specific social need and cause no harm. If they violated either of these norms, the corporation was frequently dissolved, its assets seized, and distributed back to its stockholders or to those who had been harmed. And sometimes its directors were jailed. But that's not all. There were many more rules designed to ensure that a corporation as a legal thing was kept on a very short leash. Corporations were prohibited from donating to or lobbying candidates or elected officials. Imagine if this was still the law today. Our congresspeople and senators would be debating health care reform right now, and we would win what the majority of us already wants with much less political effort. Corporations were prohibited from owning or merging with other corporations. Imagine what our organic food systems would look like today if Kraft and Nestle and Coca-Cola and many other giant corporations hadn't been allowed to purchase most of the natural foods brands on grocery store shelves, or if the mega banks had been prohibited from buying their smaller competitors and had never gotten too big to fail. Corporations were prohibited from donating to charitable or nonprofit organizations. Imagine if the American Cancer Society was prohibited from accepting donations from the cancer-causing cosmetic and chemical companies that feed it an enormous amount of money. Might this so-called nonprofit's work focus on preventing cancer rather than curing or reversing it? Corporations' financial and other records were considered public and could not be hidden from government officials. Imagine if the financial records of Enron and Lehman Brothers corporations had been accessible to the public. Would either of these companies have stolen the life savings and pension plans of so many thousands of working people? Corporations were only allowed to own land if it was necessary to fulfill their charter. Imagine if Weyerhaeuser Corporation's charter required that it log using only the most advanced ecoforestry practices. Corporations' directors and stockholders were held personally liable for all corporate harms and debts. Imagine if we were now imprisoning all of the directors and seizing all of the assets of the corporations that designed and implemented the housing foreclosure crisis now sweeping the nation. These are just a few examples of the laws that were in place at the state level across the United States throughout the 1800s and early 1900s. None of them are still on the books today in any state of the union. The corporation as a legal entity now claims the rights of a person under law, and the historic laws have been thrown out because they violate the corporation's constitutional rights as a person. To this very day, corporate lawyers continue to figure out how to get corporations redefined or as persons under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So the stuff we take for granted, the stuff that corporations now do every day, is almost entirely stuff that their lawyers won the right in federal courtrooms for corporations to do. Like a giant picture puzzle, with one piece at a time being added until it formed a virtually unchallengeable mosaic. Here are just a few examples from our last 100 years. We assume that corporations have as their primary goal to maximize profits. It turns out this goal only became primary in 1919, when Henry Ford's car company was sued by its stockholders. Until then, corporate leaders could choose to have goals other than maximizing profit. We take it for granted that corporations can speak to us politically to influence how we think about issues and candidates. Turns out it wasn't until 1936 when they won the right of free speech. Corporations won the right to bar a federal inspector from entering their factory to conduct a search in 1906. Corporations won the right to a jury trial in 1908. Corporations won the right to not be charged higher taxes than human beings in 1933. Corporations won the right to interfere in union organizing drives in 1947. Corporate lawyers won the legal argument that donations to candidates or political parties is equivalent to free speech rights in 1976. So to limit how much a corporation can donate would limit its right to speak. Money equals speech, thus opening the door for huge donations by corporations. And a footnote, the U.S. Supreme Court recently heard oral arguments, but in a case that may substantially increase a corporation's right to speak to us in federal elections with the billions and billions of dollars it can afford to spend. Corporations won the right not to speak in 1986, which gives them, for the first time, the right to refuse to print certain food labeling on their packaging, or to refuse to include certain government information in the utility bills they mail to their customers. This right was expanded in 1996. Corporate lawyers have created a picture puzzle that creates the world they want it to look like, the world the way they want it to look. And they created that reality one picture puzzle piece at a time over more than a century. What was made can just as readily be unmade. But we simply cannot do this unless we, the people, know our own history. And sadly, very few of us do. We, the people, the sovereign people, have been politically tamed sufficiently that we no longer contest the legal claim of corporate rights. And thus our activism now matches the legal reality on the ground. What does that mean for how we deal with all of the myriad corporate harms that people and the rest of nature and the rest of the natural world suffer every day? We form single-issue activist groups, underfunded, understaffed, isolated from the mainstream of American society. Campaign finance reform over here. Peak oil activism over there. Anti-war folks in this corner. Labor rights groups over there, with no cooperation or communication between them. As if that's not bad enough. But it's actually much worse than that. Let me pose a question to each of you regarding the political work that you do. Does your strategy or approach assume or accept that corporations have constitutional rights? Let me say that again. Does your strategy or approach assume or accept that corporations have constitutional rights? If you're doing any of the following activities, writing letters to corporate leaders asking them to change their policies, writing letters to or showing up at public regulatory hearings run by state or federal regulatory agencies, demonstrating in front of corporate offices or stores, buying corporate stock so you can attend annual corporate meetings of stockholders, suing corporations or threatening to sue, boycotting specific corporate brands or products, then your answer is yes, your approach does assume or accept that corporations have constitutional rights. Why am I saying this? Because all of these actions treat the corporation as a legitimate power holder, as a legitimate participant in the body politic, and it's not. If we are ever to recover our legal authority over the corporation as a legal entity, we must, as soon as possible, stop negotiating with corporate leaders, stop pleading with them to become more socially responsible, stop suing them. We can't stop doing this tomorrow or the next day because most of us still need to retool and rethink our own political work. But the truth is that these sorts of conventional anti-corporate activities cannot ultimately succeed. All they can do is slow the rate at which things get worse.
We simply cannot reverse our nation's military policies as long as we allow oil corporations to participate in politics. We cannot win real justice for working people as long as labor law enshrines corporate constitutional rights over human and civil rights. We cannot reform our nation's campaign finance laws as long as corporations have the right to donate to candidates and elected officials. We cannot respond rapidly and boldly to the peak oil and climate crises as long as oil and coal corporations get to participate in setting state and federal policy. Foreign intervention, labor rights, campaign finance, peak oil, these are not separate issues requiring separate campaigns. These are all one issue. They're all symptoms of corporate rule. They're all examples of what happens when we allow large corporations to participate in the political arena. One issue, one comprehensive solution. How long is it going to take us to figure this out? The situation is urgent. I hope I don't offend too many people here when I point out that even the workshop and plenary topics of this conference have fallen into that same old rut, trying to tackle one single issue crisis at a time, one corporate harm at a time. Over these next 3 days, I have counted 91 sessions on the schedule, and 49 of the 91, more than half, are about single issues: healthcare, food, housing, the environment, prisons, water, climate change. Here we go again. Divide and conquer, and we're doing it to ourselves in our own conference. The crises we are facing regarding all of these single issues can be linked directly to corporate rule, to giving rights to corporations. How much longer are we going to organize ourselves in this way? How do we shift our work away from single issue organizing? We learn about this hidden history. We teach it to each other, not just to our allies and friends, but to our families, to our coworkers, to everyone who will listen. We Americans need to remember who we are. Once this hidden history is common knowledge again, which wouldn't have to take that long if we made it a priority, we could start organizing ourselves more effectively while we still have time. Does the political work that you do concede or assume that corporations have rights? And imagine for a moment that a majority of Americans already support the political work that you do. Does that change how you feel about the work that you do? Does the political work that you do concede or assume that corporations have rights? And imagine that the work you do is majority work. How does that make you feel? Okay, so your 3 minutes is up. So if you could switch over and let the second person answer also. If you've forgotten, you're answering, does the political work that you do concede or assume that corporations have rights? Please elaborate. And imagine for a moment that the majority of Americans support the work you do. How does that make you feel about your work? I want to urge those of you who are resonating with my words to raise these concerns in the single issue workshops that fill this conference's agenda. And if you do, please also share some of the positive aspects of the story, which I haven't yet talked about. You see, there actually are groups popping up all across the United States which are beginning to participate in this paradigm shift. Let me spend my last few minutes telling you about some of them. Over the last few years, more than 100 rural townships in Pennsylvania, and more recently a few towns in New Hampshire, Virginia, and Maine, Mari talked about a few of them, have passed cutting-edge ordinances which prohibit corporations from engaging in particular activities like dumping sludge, raising hogs, mining, withdrawing water from local aquifers. So rather than the conventional and quite ineffective strategy of pleading with regulatory agencies to pass and then enforce laws that regulate corporate harm, these communities are banning corporations from engaging in these activities in their communities. The latest community to do so is Cheltenham, Pennsylvania, which just a few weeks ago launched a signature gathering campaign to amend its township charter. If passed by the voters in November, the new law would declare that, quote, all residents of Cheltenham Township possess the fundamental and inalienable right to exercise final legislative authority on all issues affecting them, and the right to exercise that authority through their municipal government or as a community, unquote. And that corporations shall not be considered persons within the township, and therefore, quote, corporations shall not enjoy privileges or powers under the law that make community majorities subordinate to them or have the effect of nullifying local law, unquote. Is it such a big stretch to imagine entire states passing similar laws once we the people rethink and retool our political work? Much closer to home, the residents of Spokane, Washington, have placed on the ballot this November a community bill of rights that, if passed by the voters, would amend their city charter. The new law declares that when corporate rights interfere with the rights contained within the community bill of rights, that corporate rights are nullified. Some of the rights contained in the new law include the right to affordable and safe housing, the right to affordable and renewable energy, the right to a locally based economy, the right for residents to determine the future of their neighborhoods. In the town of Mount Shasta, California, residents have placed on the local ballot an ordinance which would ensure the community's right to decide what happens to local water, prohibit bulk water extraction and chemical cloud seeding or weather manipulation by corporations, that must be a first, assert nature's right to natural water cycles, and subordinate hydropower large water bottling corporations to local democratic decision making. The ordinance is titled the City of Mount Shasta Community Water Rights and Self-Government Ordinance. If it passes this fall, it will be the first community in California to assert their right to say no to corporate harms by passing a rights-based ordinance. In all of these campaigns, local groups of people are taking themselves seriously enough to imagine the possibility that we actually could live in a real democracy. They are refusing to plead with corporate or government leaders to give them what they want. Instead, they are daring to think and strategize and act as if they are in charge. And believe it or not, they are. You may be sitting there wondering, can't the state governments or the corporations simply sue these local communities to stop these new local laws? The simple answer is yes, but it's very interesting what happens when a large absentee corporation or a state government sues a community. Because these new laws have been carefully written in such a way as to force the corporation or government player to argue in court that it has more rights in the community than do the people who live there. And once it plays that card, the residents of that community tend to get so outraged that they become even better organized and mobilized than they were before. And there's nothing more nerve-wracking for a corporate board of directors than a fully mobilized citizenry. You can read much more about these and other campaigns by visiting a few websites. My favorites are celdf.org, which is C-E-L-D as in dog, F as in Frank, celdf.org, which is Mari's organization, poclad.org, P-O-C-L-A-D as in dog, .org, and D-U-H-C, D as in dog, U-H-C.org, Democracy Unlimited, the organization I founded in 1995. And as I said earlier, I will be leading a full weekend workshop here in Portland in late February titled First Steps in Dismantling Corporate Rule. For more information about it, you can contact me at Paul, P-A-U-L, at 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Are those of us who are here in this room ready to feel our own power as the majority? Just imagine how this seismic shift in our own collective consciousness would create even bigger ripples in the larger culture. Thank you so very much.
have some time for discussion or questions. We're not depending on the courts, because you're right, it's the courts that were helped us get to this place. And as I spoke about, we're not looking to our legislatures at this point either, because they're not doing us much good. And to your point, I think you're right on point, because if we can't look to the courts, and if we're not able to look to the Congress, and we can't seem to get to our state legislatures or state regulatory agencies to help us, what we've found is that communities that we've worked with, and as Paul mentioned, we've worked with over 100 communities across Pennsylvania to ban certain kinds of corporate activities, and about a dozen of those have adopted provisions within those ordinances, those laws, to strip corporations of constitutional rights. And what's beginning to happen in Pennsylvania, and the reason we do our work there is because that's where we were founded, and now our work has gone beyond that, but we're beginning to have conversations with those communities in Pennsylvania to talk about bringing them together to begin a conversation about changing the Pennsylvania Constitution. And that's a conversation that's actually just getting underway. And you raise a really important issue, and Paul raised it as well, which is we have people working on single issues, and just like the communities that we work with, they came to us with a seemingly single issue like sludge or factory hog farms or coal mining or water withdrawals, water privatization. And we worked with them to recognize that they have that problem, and there's plenty of consequences with that problem. It wasn't the sludge that was their primary problem, it was the problem of democracy, that they couldn't decide what actually happened in their community. And there are reasons for that, because you have corporations, you have the state, you have the courts coming down on them and preventing them and preempting them from being able to decide what happens in their community. And so they broke out of thinking about it as a single issue and instead now think about it as a democracy issue, as a constitutional issue. And that's why these ordinances are so different, because they're no longer trying to regulate sludge better. They're trying to actually change the existing structure of law, which prevents them from deciding what happens in their own community. And so, to your point, I think you're absolutely right that we need to be able to move beyond these single issues, as Paul was talking about as well, because it's not a single issue. It's actually something that brings us all together, is that we can't decide what happens in their community, and therefore we can't decide to protect the environment or the public health. And the work that we're doing in Pennsylvania and these other places is now bringing these communities together to move from the grassroots level, to drive that up to the state level and possibly the federal level. Right, yeah, I mean, that's a question that we struggle with, which is, it seems like it's human nature that it's not until the problem reaches our doorstep that we decide to do something about it. That's exactly what happens. People come to us because they're facing a pretty imminent threat, like their water being taken. But we did see, for example, the town of Nottingham in New Hampshire was facing a very direct threat. They had a company coming in and wanting to take their water. And other communities looked to them. They weren't facing threats immediately themselves, but recognized that that could happen to them too. So that's one step removed. But I think you're right. I mean, it has to get to a place where you don't have to be facing an immediate threat to your community. They are able to see that you don't need that immediate threat, because my God, what else has to happen for us to recognize that we're in big trouble here? But it seems like, and I think we all do this, that, you know, until the doctor tells me that I need to change my cholesterol and my eating habits, I'm not going to do it. And that seems to be what's happening. But I think we're moving to the place where it has to be less about that immediate threat and more of getting a recognition of how that structure of law works.
I think what happened in Humboldt County, where I live in Northern California, actually is a good illustration of a situation where the public didn't see an urgent threat, but there was enough culture shift that had already happened on the ground in the county around our own political and cultural organizing to help people understand the proper relationship between peoples and corporations in a democratic society. So the folks who were already tuned into this looked at, I don't know which of our mics is doing this, looked at a situation where Walmart Corporation had paid for and organized a special election in Eureka to try to get themselves approved in a zoning change. And then, I mean, basically it was their special election. Nobody else had asked for it. And about the same period, Maxam Corporation spent, it was like $300,000 or $400,000. It was 95% of all of the money that was spent to unseat our new district attorney, who had only been in power 6 weeks in an upset election, and they organized and fully funded. And so the public in that, in Humboldt County, wasn't necessarily tuned into there being an immediate crisis, but because there'd been enough cultural activism done to change the paradigm so that we understand what that it was a threat to our democracy rather than a single issue. The group that was there organized a ballot initiative countywide to withdraw the right of non-local corporations from being involved in any way in county elections. And that passed. And it's kind of complicated what happened after that. It ended up being thrown out in a very tragic way. But for a couple of years, that was the law of the land in Humboldt County. And I think, so, you know, I think the other part of your answer is it doesn't have to be an immediate threat, because almost every action that corporations are taking is illegitimate, you know, in our communities, because they're mostly acting politically, which is illegitimate. So as long as there's a core group of people who are seeing the issue in that way, it can be framed differently and people will mobilize around it.
Yeah, I mean, we get the question a lot, like why wouldn't a community just ban gay people, right? Or ban black people, or prevent women from doing this or that? Well, I mean, that's the question we get a lot. And I think it's an important question. I think it's a fair question because people, you know, you said opening up, letting the genie out of the bottle. The genie's long gone. This work is very much about expanding the rights of people. And so how these ordinances are drafted, it actually it expands the current rights that we have as people and the current rights that we have as a community, and recognize for the very first time rights of ecosystems, of nature. I think it's probably obvious, but we certainly wouldn't be working with a community that wants to change the rights of people. Those civil rights that we have, our interest is obviously not in shrinking that. It's in expanding it, which is what these ordinances do.
And I also think that, you know, progressives seem to think that we need to get all of our laws to protect people and nature at the federal level, and conservatives seem to be, at least the official conventional wisdom is, they're pro-states' rights. I think it's a really odd mix. I mean, medical marijuana laws are state laws, and the right to die, I forget exactly what it's called here in Oregon, but you folks have passed it twice by ballot initiative, I believe, or maybe three times.
Or
death with dignity. I seem to be a very small minority of left-wing people who actually trust the common sense of American human beings to actually support rights, at least in majority vote. So I don't have fear of local or state rights-based organizing. I just don't. And I know a lot of people do on the left. I think that's jumping ahead of the game. Oregon doesn't really even have significant organizing going on at the municipal level yet. So I think thinking about state-level organizing is really premature pretty much everywhere but Pennsylvania, in my opinion. You know, in Pennsylvania, 100 townships have passed ordinances. Their supervisors are get it. The people who voted them in get it. They're ready to start organizing at the state level. To me, you organize at the scale that you're capable of mobilizing around. And there isn't enough mobilization in most states.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I think the reason that we do our work at the local grassroots level is that's where the work actually is happening. Because it's not that we haven't tried at the state level. We certainly have with the Pennsylvania legislature and the New Hampshire legislature, other places, Maine legislature we were fighting in this spring. It's simply not there. The power simply is not there, which is why we're working at the grassroots level with the idea of building a grassroots movement to drive change upward. I think you're right that this case before the Supreme Court now offers a bit of a window of opportunity to start talking about these things, and hopefully there will be some more conversation. But I think that only hopefully will empower things at the local level where change is really beginning to happen.
I'm leading a workshop in Mount Vernon, Washington in January, a full weekend, and I'm working very hard on getting the organizers, who were all progressive green types, to go out and meet with the teabagger folks who are capable of having intellectual conversations with them. You know, some of them are just too raging to have a conversation or too irrational. But there are plenty of conservatives. I mean, I think of the Patrick Buchanan supporters who are fundamentally anti-large corporation, anti-globalization. I think it would be absolutely fascinating to have those sorts of folks and libertarians in our communities working together.
Yeah, and just to note that, I mean, the communities that we work in, I mean, even Spokane, these are Bush voters. I mean, these are conservative places that are Republican, and it's really interesting to see that in these places, they're beginning to make change that we're not seeing happen in progressive places like in Portland. And so I think it gives us a lot to think about. I think you gave us a lot to think about who's doing this work and why.
You pick up the Oregonian every day, and if your brain has gone through the paradigm shift that we're talking about, you see the trigger on the front page almost every day. At least I do. The reason that I so often said in my talk today how critical it is that we learn our history is that in a way I'm hearing in the questions over and over, you're jumping ahead of the game, right? You want to organize at the state and federal level already in many of your questions. You have to learn this history. And each state has its unique corporate rule history because charters come from the state legislatures and corporate codes are state corporate codes primarily of any major newspaper.
I mean, it's sort of funny when you're sitting in, you know, a tiny room in, you know, middle of Maine and having conversations about, well, are folks going to use NAFTA to come after us? They're going to use the WTO? And the answer is, yeah, they are. And so we started talking with communities because how the ordinances are structured now, they focus on state and federal government and preventing them from being able to come in and nullify those ordinances. And now we're beginning to have conversations with some of those communities to actually put in place provisions that address exactly what you're talking about, which is international authorities that allow corporations or countries to come in to override the protections that communities try to put in place. Then I'll do a book plug. Just actually last week, our executive director, Tom Lindsay, with Annika Campbell, they've written a book about our work. It's called Be the Change, How to Get What You Want in Your Community. And it's available now. I think Powell's has it, at least online. I'm not sure. I think they have a couple of copies on the shelves as well. It's just come out. And so you're welcome to take a look at it. I have a copy here. Or find it online or in your bookstore, because it tells more of the stories of these communities and why they took the steps that they took instead of going the traditional organizing route. It's called Be the Change.
By yeah. Thomas Lindsay. I've been thinking that Portland might be really one of the ripest cities in the country for an ordinance that looks like a sustainability ordinance and is all about guaranteeing sustainability to people and nature and withdrawing it from corporations. And it's one of the things that I've been having the beginnings of conversations with the transition town groups in Portland and in Salem.
So just to repeat, he was asking about there are different ways that you can embarrass or shame a corporation to change the way they do their business. And is that, and is doing that, I guess corporation by corporation, is that too piecemeal or does that have the level of effectiveness that we want?
Very briefly saying, I don't think it is too piecemeal. To me, people power at the local level is the most powerful people power of all. And I love to see bottom-up organizing. And Pennsylvania is showing us the path. That 100 communities have gone through this culture shift, this paradigm shift of thinking about who we are as Americans, and they're ready to change the world. Personally, as a longtime community organizer, I can't envision starting globally or nationally when people can feel so powerful more locally.
Thanks, everybody.
I just want to thank everybody for coming and to let you know that if you want to pick one of these up, I have a comprehensive social change online bookstore with all of the key titles to learn about these issues.